Hello, and welcome to another episode of Queer Not Here, where we're sharing the stories of LGBTQ Malaysians who've migrated away from Malaysia. I'm Nez, and most of the folks I've managed to speak to have been in the quote-unquote Western countries, mainly the US, UK, and Australia, which probably says a lot more about me than anything else. So I was quite keen to also speak to folks who were closer to home and maybe didn't have such a cultural change when they moved. So this episode, I speak to KM, a bisexual working and living in Hong Kong. Thanks for listening.
Do you want to be anonymous or are you fine using your name?
I think I prefer to be anonymous, if that's okay.
Okay. Do you have like a pseudonym you'd rather use?
KM is fine.
How about your location?
Location, I think is okay. Hong Kong's fine.
Okay, cool. How do you identify?
Bisexual.
Nice. All right, let's go back to how long you've been away now?
I've been away for, I left in November. So I think it's coming up to, yeah, it's just a little over 6 months now. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That recent.
Yeah.
In a pandemic still, also.
Like, kind of fresh. I was fucking around looking for jobs. I got really lucky. Just like given everything. I know a lot of people have lost like jobs and stuff. So I got really lucky to actually like be able to like move kind of things, also because I work in corporate, so it's a bit easier in that sense.
So was it always kind of in the plan to move, or it just kind of came about?
So the whole reason why I moved was I was attempting to migrate to Melbourne, which is where like my partner at the time was like studying and residing and stuff like that. So we kind of had this plan of me moving over, staying there for a couple of years just until she like kickstarts her career and stuff like that. And then we weren't sure where to go from there, but like that was kind of like in the short term plan. But the pandemic hit and it closed. So it was quite hard to kind of apply for visas and stuff. So I was actually just applying for, there weren't any opportunities in Australia. So I was applying to Hong Kong. But yeah, I think the main reason was definitely to kind of use it as a stepping stone to to be with my partner. Yeah.
And is that still the plan?
We're no longer together. So not really, but like from a personal level as well, like I'm thinking about whether or not moving home is a viable option right now. I mean, of course, like there are different things, like different considerations involved besides just being queer. Politically, I the situation is a little bit difficult right now, but there's always that sense of like, oh, like my family's there. Most of my friends are back home too. So it's still something I'm actively thinking about. I think it's less like if I'm not, so currently like I'm actually seeing someone who is based in Hong Kong, and just thinking about like, oh, would it be possible for us to move back home? Yeah, I think the answer is like no, especially like if you're queer and like visa situations as well. It's like kind of like an added layer of like, so the person I'm seeing is not Malaysian. So there's an added layer of like, these are situations where, oh, if something happens with like authorities and stuff like that, it's going to be a bit tricky to navigate.
I mean, you said there were a couple of different factors, but how much was your queerness kind of a factor of leaving?
I would say maybe like 60%.
That's quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 60% like now in recent years, but like when I was younger, I feel like it was even higher. Like when I was younger, it was probably like 90 to 95%. So I always viewed Malaysia as just kind of like a temporary space, because I didn't see, like growing up, I'm not sure if you felt this as well, because I think we grew up in like similar timelines, but the queer visibility growing up was just so, and I'm sure it's like still pretty low now, but I feel like I see a lot more like queer young people on like Twitter and like in queer spaces. But yeah, growing up, I didn't really see that So in my head, it was always like this thing where like, oh, I have to, like everyone else has already left. And so like, even like studying and stuff like that, like, oh, you know, you gotta try to study like overseas, find a way to get overseas, get a job and just kind of stay there. Yeah, it was never the intention to kind of move back home and settle down. Cause I studied overseas for a bit and then I came back home. And like when I came back home, it was kind of this shift where I had to readjust my own mindset to kind of like not view home as this temporary space and try to like settle down. But yeah, definitely I think like when I was younger, it was much like that percentage was like much higher. Whereas now I think, oh, maybe it could be possible because I lived the last like 4 years at home. Yeah, I guess I was, yeah, I think it's also a position of privilege to not have authorities. I didn't have any issues with authorities that much for the past 4 years. Yeah, just looking at it now, like, oh, maybe it is possible to kind of go home.
So then where is that 65% coming from?
I think if you're like, for me, my brain's kind of like, oh, if I'm an individual and I only have to look after myself, it's fine. Like, I have no issues. Like, oh, if the cops want to, like, knock on my door, I'm like, yeah, whatever, right? But it's like, I think it's different when you have a partner or, like, someone else to kind of, not even just a partner, like, if you have a kid or, like, you know, anyone that you think is kind of, that your queer identity is kind of putting like in harm's way just because of how like the government works. Like that's 65%, where it's like, oh, like what happens if I live with my partner back home and then something happens, even though I know like probability wise, like I don't know, like it doesn't, I yeah, like it might not ever happen in my lifetime where like the cops show up on my door, but there's always that what if that bothers me. Yeah. So
how does that affect your like mental health, you think?
I think it affects it quite a bit, just from the perspective of like a lot of how I view relationships and forming relationships back home goes back to whether or not I view that place as permanent or temporary.
Mm.
So because I was always like, oh, like I want to move, like I feel almost as if like most of the relationships that I formed, especially when I was like younger, was with this mindset of, well, we might not see each other again. Like I might not be here or they might not be here. Or like even just with my family and stuff, like it was kind of like my parents, when I moved to Hong Kong, my parents had like such a hard time because I had just come home. So for them, it was like, oh, like why this sudden move? Oh, like, don't you know, like, this has always been in the plan, that kind of thing. So even just like, yeah, just the perception of like my relationships and just viewing Malaysia as like this temporary space. Yeah, I think it definitely like really affected me. And I don't think I realized it until like quite recently. I just thought it was normal. Like,
so if you see like Malaysia as a temporary space, do you have this kind of like, do you feel like it's home?
I wouldn't have called it home until like 4 years ago. Yeah. When I came home and I was like, okay, it's time to kind of like, yeah, I just always felt like this outsider, which I know is like, I guess I also kind of matured in the last like 4 years, like especially coming, like having to come home and readjust. But yeah, like when I went to study abroad, like it didn't really matter. I felt like, oh, like I was finally seen. almost. I mean, I think that's also like problematic, but like, yeah, it felt at that time when I was like young, I was like, oh, it feels good to be seen, and it feels good to kind of see people that are like me. And then I guess because that kind of shifted like how I felt about myself, and like when I came home, I was like, I still had friends from uni who were coming home with me, so being able to bring that community and just kind of transplanting it to a different place kind of helped solidify how I felt about Malaysia as a home. I would say like, yeah, I do see Malaysia as more of a home now. It feels more of a loss, actually. Like moving to Hong Kong feels more of a loss because I do yearn to kind of be back home if I had a choice. Like if I didn't have to worry about all these extra things and safety and security reasons, I would actively choose to go back home, I think, now at this current point.
Was that the first time you kind of left feeling a sense of loss?
Yeah. I think all the times before, I was just kind of like, yeah. So yeah, it was different. I think it's also like when I came back home, I was also kind of like introduced to queer spaces. So prior to that, I had no idea like all these spaces existed, like all these like little pockets that you would find if you were kind of like looking hard enough. Like if you knew someone would know someone else. You know, like being introduced to that and seeing like all these people live their lives was such, and also like it was such like, I feel like it was very late in my, yeah, I wish it happened like sooner. I don't know when you like started like, you know, being part of the community, but for me, like I felt like it happened quite late. So I was like, oh.
What do you consider late?
Oh, I was like, I think I was like 26, 25, 26 when I started like meeting people. That was like, yeah. When it happened for you, like
I think it was pretty, yeah, it was pretty soon after I got back from Melbourne, I think, just because you know, I had a partner and then met some of the queers who then introduced me to, you know how it goes. So and that was, yeah, it was definitely, I think, helped me readjust. Yeah, I think kind of finding that community almost right away was like a huge help. But it's like, yeah, I was like 23-ish, 23, 24. So yeah, the 20s la, you know, when you discover all these things.
yeah. I guess when I like finally discovered it too, I was like, oh, how long have you guys been here? Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's like, oh, like, wow, like, how long has this space been here that I just didn't know about? Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember, like, finding that space, you know, like Rainbow Roja or something, and just kind of dancing with a bunch of queers to, like, you know, with no abandon was just so joyful. It was such a wonderful feeling. How does you, I mean, it sounds like you've moved back and forth a few times. When you left this time to Hong Kong, how did it affect your relationship with like folks back home?
I think just because of like the nature of corporate in Hong Kong, work-wise, it's been quite busy. So it's a bit difficult to actually like manage being able to speak to people back home. But I think like, I had a bit of practice because like a lot of my friends are kind of like on different like time zones as well. A lot of people have actually moved away too. So yeah, I try my best, but I think like, yeah, I think as well with the pandemic, like everyone is kind of in this pandemic exhaustion phase. And it's like this, yeah, this weird kind of like social twilight zone. But I think we do our best to kind of just like keep in touch. I think with my family, like, my family, we tend to call each other like on a weekly basis, but it's always it's kind of always like that same conversation. Like for some reason, my mom will always be like, oh, there's, whenever we talk about it, we somehow or other like the conversation shifts to, oh, like you're not going to be there in like 3 years.
There is in Hong Kong.
Yeah. Like she thinks I'm going to come back home in like 3 years. Like, and it's like quite a frequent like shift in the conversation where she's like, oh yeah, but you're like very nonchalantly like, oh yeah, but you're not gonna be you're not gonna be there, it's fine, it's chill. And I'm like, cool. Like what do you say to that, right? It's like, oh,
we'll see.
Yeah. Because I don't even know, like it's hard to say because I don't even know where I'm gonna be,
right,
3 years time. It's so, I haven't found a place where like, oh, this is permanent. You know, I think like some people when they move, they're like, oh, the first time I move away is gonna be that place, it's that place for me, and I'm staying here forever. But I haven't quite like decided that.
That's interesting. That's different to what other people have been saying.
Which part?
The not knowing. I think a couple of the other people I've spoken to were quite certain when they left.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. How out were you back home?
My family knows. My mother is in kind of like this denial stage, which she has been for quite some time. So I just kind of ride the wave, you know. I'm just like, all right.
Is she like expecting you to get married type of in denial, or just don't want to talk about it in denial?
Oh, she's the avoidant type. So it's like, it's funny, we had a conversation about moving out. So before I got this job, right, I was like talking about like moving out because I wanted my own space. And she was like, oh, why would you want to move out? Like, what's the problem? I was like, oh, my sister, because my sister just got married and she has moved out, right? And I was like, well, she's moved out, so I should move out too. And she's like, yeah, but she's married. And I'm like, okay, so? And then she's like, well, I guess I always imagine you staying here forever. She used the word forever, which is a very strong word, yeah? Wow. And I was like, so in my head, it's like, oh, she knows I'm not going to get like married to, well, I could get married to a man. But like, I guess in her head, she's like, oh, this person is not going to get married. So there's no reason to why she would move out of this house. And I'm like sitting at the dining table, like just like shoveling food into my mouth, because I'm like, I don't want to be part of this conversation anymore. But yeah.
But did you have did you like come out to her at one point?
Yeah, when I was 16.
How
so
was
it's
that?
Been a while. Oh, it was not a great experience. Actually, I didn't even have the opportunity to come out myself, because we were all in the car, and I told my sister that, oh, you know, like I was planning on telling my parents about this girl that I was seeing in high school, and she thought that I had already done it and that everyone was cool and that there was no chaos. And she was just like, oh yeah, how's your girlfriend? And I'm like, fuck.
Oh no.
I was like, bro, I was like, yeah. And I, of course, like I can laugh about it now because I'm like older and like we're past that, right? But at that time, I was just so I was just so stressed out. Yeah, so that's how people, that's how my family found out. So they're kind of still like, my dad is pretty chill, but my mom's, yeah, still a little bit in denial. Friends-wise, I think I'm just, friends and also like in the workplace, I was quite like open about being queer. Mm. Yeah. Which I know is like not a lot of people have that, like can do that. But yeah, I was fortunate to have like a good system, support system.
How, I mean, I don't know really what the queer scene is like in Hong Kong, but do you feel safer there, more secure?
Yeah, I do. I think it's because, things are kind of shifting now, but I think from a queer perspective, like you definitely see, like if you're just walking the street, like you definitely see a lot more queer people who are being openly like holding hands and kind of like, yeah, doing like what normal couples do. So you definitely, there's definitely more visibility on the ground. And I think as well, like, I don't think that, I'm still quite new, but I don't think that cops really care too much about your queer identity here. Mm. There are, of course, like other things that are going on, but I've never seen hostility in that way. I think here it's kind of like, as long as what you're doing doesn't really bother people, like people just don't care that much. Yeah. So from the perspective, like being queer, yeah, I do feel more secure and safe here. It's because people don't really like, they don't really question it. They don't look at you.
How does that make you feel? Like that shift?
It's wild. But I remember the first time, like, just like being able to kiss someone in public without like this paranoia that like someone is gonna be like, what the fuck, you know, like just being able to do that is, yeah, it was just so overwhelming. I didn't feel like, I always felt anxious back home. Also because my partner is Muslim. So like that's an added like layer of, you know, worrying about safety and things like that. Yeah, so when I first was able to do that here, it just felt like super liberating. It was like, oh, like I feel so at ease. And I hadn't realized how not at ease I was before until I finally felt that. And I was like, wow, I've really been like anxious about this for a very long time.
Are you friends with any other Malaysians there?
Yeah, I've got a couple of like Malaysians here too, but I think a few of them have actually moved back home. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's because of the pandemic and just like people wanting to be with their families. But yeah, so when I first started, like there were a few that were here and then they just kind of like shifted back home. I think most of my friends here are like Hong Kong white locals. I don't see as many Malaysians, I think, just like in the office and stuff like that.
But is that something like you look for or something you need to have Malaysians around you?
I think it would be nice. But I also know that, like, there are different types of Malaysians, lah. And, like, like, if, you know, like, if you're a Malaysian and we vibe, that's cool, right? That's chill. Like, let's do it. But if you're, like, I think, okay, so some of the Malaysians, I'll give an example. Some of the Malaysians I've met here, they really, like, I understand that it's, you know, you can feel disappointed with how things are happening back home. But it's like coming from a place of like, oh, like Hong Kong is like so much better than like Malaysia and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, I think both countries have its own set of like individual problems. But like in that whole, like in that conversation where it's like, you're really like shitting on Malaysia without properly like identifying like the problems that are really going on. And just like, yeah, just that perspective is kind of, yeah, I think we're different in that sense. But I think it's also because like, oh, like maybe if I give it more time, like I'll meet like more Malaysians that are kind of like-minded. It's not something that I need. I think familiarity is something that I craved much early on when I, like the first couple of months I was here, but then I kind of realized that like, oh, like culture-wise, I think it's not too different Hong Kong and Malaysia. Like it's not like on the opposite end of the spectrum. So I think there is sort of like still some relatability in terms from that perspective.
Do you ever feel like, I mean, if you meet a Malaysian who's maybe not so like-minded, maybe politically a very different side of the spectrum, do you feel that anxiety about your queerness?
Yeah, 100%. I would feel, I think arguably I would feel more anxious about a Malaysian who was on that end of the spectrum as compared to a Hong Konger who was on the end of the spectrum.
Right.
Yeah. I would feel like, oh my God, like what, I don't know why and I can't explain it, but yeah, I think I do feel that difference, like if it was somewhere from back home.
Has that happened to you?
It has not, thankfully. It has not. Not from a politically different, not from like, oh, like this person is anti-queer, not from that perspective. I have met someone who is a racist.
right.
And I was just like, yeah, I don't think like safety was, safety wasn't my concern at that time. I was just kind of like, what is happening? Yeah. So yeah, I haven't met someone who is Malaysian super conservative, like across all spectrums. Thankfully, yeah.
Okay, staying on that tangent, has your how you view your racial identity changed when you move?
My racial identity?
Yeah, because I mean, you know, being Malaysian here, race is so much a part of who you are or how you're defined. And does that change when you moved?
It has changed. But I think it's still, I think context-wise it's different, but I still think that in Hong Kong, like race is still like a prominent issue. But the difference is that because I am Chinese or like Chinese passing, especially like I'm the person that's in a position of privilege. So I think like kind of like flipping that over and trying to be more aware of other communities here, like Black and Brown folk that are constantly like oppressed and just like constantly having to deal with like the police and stuff like that. And of course, like it's also the case like back home, but I think that's like, there are different layers to it. So yeah, definitely here it's still something that I actively think about, just in a different context, I would say, yeah.
Are there things about where you are now that you wish we had in Malaysia?
I actually really like this whole, like, well, I think that there's a balance. So, for example, like, when I talk about how people generally mind their own business, sometimes it's on such an extreme here. That can be both a good and bad thing. So I think that was once a couple of like months ago where I actually got into an altercation, like a physical altercation with this dude. And like, we were on quite a busy part of town. Like we were in the subway station and no one stopped. No one blinked, like nothing, absolutely nothing, right? And it's like, it's so, like, that is jarring to me. So this whole like mind your own business thing can be a good thing, but it can like at an extreme end. I know that, oh, if this was back home and you were walking like the LRT or something and someone like punched somebody, like everyone will stop and like kepo and like even if it's just like kepo, right? Like there will definitely be eyes on you. But this one is just like, everyone's just like minding their own business and just kind of walking through. Yeah, which is so like, yeah, that part is kind of like, you kind of need that balance that Malaysian community, like I think the Malaysian community is like very strong in that sense. Like whenever something bad happens, we tend to kind of pull together. So having that come together and I think like just kind of like a good balance between the two would be nice to have back home. Yeah, but other than that, I think, yeah, politically, both countries have their own issues, lah. But yeah, I think that's a good mindset to kind of port over.
I think you answered both at the same time somehow, because the next one was what are things about Malaysia that you wish you had there besides food?
Yeah, I tell you, I tried to find nasi lemak here. It was not a good
No,
I have unsuccessfully. No, there is lah, but it's not the same.
But there's so many Malaysians there. No,
I think there's a lot of Malaysian Chinese. So it's like different cuisines that bring like better ported over. Yeah, I haven't, well, there is probably a good nasi lemak place, but yeah, similarly, like if you go overseas and you buy, it's not gonna be that roadside stall that's like bungkus, yeah. Right, and like you know, you sit at the alleyway and you kind of like look around, there's like cockroaches and like rats, that experience you cannot like replicate. Yeah, so but okay lah, like I think the food here is like pretty similar. Like Chinese cuisine is definitely similar, but Malay food, like it's hard. Yeah.
Besides food, anything you wish you had there?
I wish I was more of a, well, I know that like this experience in itself is also kind of privileged, but like back home I feel like this context of like race is kind of complicated for us, I think. It's really complicated. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but I do think that generally speaking, we do kind of come together. Like, yeah, and like help out each other's races. Of course, I understand like not everyone's awareness is on the same level, but just, I guess, having that sense of that racial togetherness and kind of just that community that I grew up with, and like kind of like being aware of the different cultures and stuff like that. I think that's something that's kind of needed here, because I think it's just so, yeah, like it's even more drastic here, I feel. Like you only kind of look at it from like a very like linear perspective. When you talk about like the Hong Kong perspective, in like generally mainstream wise, like it's quite like told from the perspective of like a Chinese. So I think like just like pointing a little bit like that exposure from back home and just bring it here, I think would be quite nice. Yeah, because there is quite a huge like community of like black and brown folk here too. So
yeah, I think it's so it's so complex. You know, like having to kind of explain Malaysian race relations to a foreigner is like almost impossible, you know, to like actually go through all the layers. But as much as I think that the toxic aspects of it are normalized, I think what is also normalized is how diverse we are, right? And how we see different kinds of faces every day, and that's normal. I think we also like take that for granted sometimes.
Yeah, I think we do take it for granted. You're right. And a lot of my friends have been kind of interested here, like, about what the political situation is back home. And yeah, I struggle myself too to kind of explain, because I think you can't really explain the political system without actually going into how race works in Malaysia. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, it's so heavily intertwined with everything else, even like food and culture and just like schools, even education systems and stuff like that. I think we do take it for granted. And especially, I think KL, like specific schools in the KL PJ region, take that for granted. Because there are also pockets where Chinese schools are just Chinese people. And like, they really, like, because I went to university with a couple of people who really had little to no kind of experience with an Indian person or a Malay person. Mm. And so they were completely unaware of what those different cultures were like, or not to say that they didn't respect it, they were just oblivious and kind of just never had like experience with that. So yeah, I think we definitely do take it for granted.
I remember talking to some Malaysians in New Zealand, and we were having this conversation, and we were talking about like language, especially like how much we take for granted that we're bilingual or trilingual, and that's totally normal. And then you leave the country, and then that's suddenly like an A+ skill to have.
You just write it on your CV, just like list down like all the,
So how big would you say is your Malaysian identity a part of you there?
Oh, I don't think it's quite like, I mean, of course I'm proud to be Malaysian, but I think it doesn't, like, just social-wise, it doesn't really come up that often. Oh, unless, like, people are recommending me Malaysian food to go and try. So I think that is, like, the general perception of us, where it's like, oh, like, Malaysians really love their food. So I think that's universal. So people do tend to, like, come up to me and, like, do that. But I think otherwise it doesn't really come up socially that often. But I do think that, like, when I am looking at certain issues, or like when I'm like reading about certain things that are happening here in Hong Kong, I do think it offers that perspective of like, yeah, like what it's like coming from sort of a heavily multiracial country that actively expresses that. So I think that there is a shift in perspective coming from Malaysia and just like being in Hong Kong and just like kind of observing the way things are progressing here. Yeah, but aside that, like on a day-to-day, I don't think it really like comes up that much.
Mm.
Yeah. But the other day someone said that I was from Singapore and I got really mad. There is a difference between these two countries. Like, yeah. But aside that, like, it's all chill.
I actually got that recently from a Malaysian. That was terrible.
How did you respond?
For some reason, they were like, oh, are you Singaporean? I'm like, why is that the first thing you guessed? Oh, man, that was painful.
Yeah, I get it. I'm so sorry you had to go through that.
How much do you keep up with what's happening back home?
Oh, I feel like so when I went overseas for the first time, I didn't really like care too much about it. But now I feel like I'm a little bit more like protective. So like, yeah, now I'm trying to like keep up like a lot more than I did like the first time I left. But yeah, it's kind of grim. It's really kind of grim. And I think there's like a lot of things that are happening all at once. So I like, it's hard to kind of like catch up to everything, but I do try to read up. Twitter makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I know. Or like WhatsApp groups or something, right?
Yeah.
Someone's going to tell you.
Yeah. As long as it's not like the anti-forwarded messages that like everyone copies and pastes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's easier like friends like who are similarly interested.
Do you want to come home at some point? Like, do you want to live in Malaysia again?
Yeah. Oh,
Not come home to like visit. I mean, like, yeah, long term.
That's tough. I don't think I know yet. I don't think I know. I think that's my honest answer. Like, it's hard to tell. It's not a strong no. It's also not a strong yes. Yeah. I think it would really have to depend on how things progress.
What would that progress look like? Like, what would the conditions have to be for you to come home?
Well, I think the first thing that, like, comes to mind is also, like, COVID-wise. That's really, like, the first thing. Because I just looking from the outside, it's hard to things are going to progress. And I'm sure, like, as someone who's, like, living back home, like, even more so, there's so much, like, uncertainty, especially with the government being so wishy-washy. So that would be kind of the first thing I would think about. And also, are getting older. I have a sister back home, but, like, I am also thinking, like, oh, like, if they fall sick and stuff, like, that would really push me to actually come back. But I think in terms of, like, okay, we're just talking about queerness, I don't know. I think I actually don't, and I think this is, like, maybe kind of bad, but I actually don't see, I can't imagine a future where Malaysia is, on a legal perspective, like, is open about queerness. Yeah, like, maybe, like, okay, like, maybe there won't be as many raids, like, so on a physical basis, like, maybe cops won't be, like, looking to arrest or to criminalize, like, queer people. But from, like, just from a law perspective, I don't see that happening. Yeah, I just totally can't imagine a politician being like, yeah, gay rights, like, I can't. And that's kind of sad, right? I don't think I see that. So it would also be a matter of whether or not I would be okay with that in the future. But yeah, so it's neither a strong yes or a strong no for me right now.
And on that note, what do you wish for the Malaysian LGBT community?
I think first and foremost, I hope that everyone's safe, which is kind of like the most basic of things. But, like, I want people to feel safe, to be and to feel safe, which are two very different things, and to not constantly feel like someone is going to take away someone you love, or someone is going to, you know, say something to you on the street. Or even just, like, walking into something as simple as, I used to have this problem back home too, but, like, I'm sure for the trans folks back home, like, it's even harder too. Like, sometimes just even something as simple as going to the washroom can be such, like, a difficult, like, mental hurdle, right? And it's, yeah, so, like, all these little things, like, I want the queer folk back home, the queer community back home to kind of be able to experience that, this normalcy where you don't have to be constantly on edge or constantly anxious about just, like, little things that you do, normal things that you do. And then, like, beyond that, of course, like, you know, queer marriages, but, like, or just, like, legal rights for queer people. Yeah, for people to be able to change their gender identity, medical health rights, that would be nice. Yeah, so those are just a few things, but of course, like, the list goes on, right? Like, we have so much more to, like, go, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, I have one more question. Do you have any sounds that remind you of home?
Oh, this is gonna be really weird, but this is one of the few sounds that I haven't heard anywhere else, and it's the sound of chicha. I don't like chicha, but, like, this sound, like, in the middle of the night is so uniquely Malaysian.
That's true. We have our own brand of chicha.
Yeah, you just can't get it anywhere else. But yeah, I think that's the one thing that is just kind of, like, reminds me so much of home. Yeah. Mm.
Cool. Do you think I missed anything? Is there anything you want to add?
No, I think we're good to go. This is a really nice chat, actually.
Yeah.
It's kind of cathartic to kind of go through stuff.
That's good. I'm glad. I was a bit worried that, you know, just, like, bringing up heavy shit with people, you never know kind of how it goes, you know?
No, but I think it's really nice, though. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how, like, all of this comes together, and also like how like what other people's perspectives are.
Yeah.
So yeah, yeah. I'm actually really looking forward to like seeing. Yeah. So please like link.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Of course, I'm gonna send you the edit before I publish it, so you can have a listen. But yeah, you've been like my fourth interview, and it's been quite diverse, which I'm like, ooh, this is interesting.
But I hope it goes well. Yeah.
Thanks
so much for like taking the time to like chat. Okay.
Thank you so much.
I'll see you around.
Bye.
Hey. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Queer Not Here. If you'd like to give me feedback or are curious about anything discussed in this episode, do write to me at queernothere@gmail.com or hit me up on Instagram @queer.nothere. Thanks for listening!